morning. Today is Thursday, November the 15th. Joining us this morning, head trick-or-treater in the city of Eureka, Fred Van Fleck. Good morning.
Good morning.
Did you share?
I'm sorry.
Apparently not. Yeah. It's scary sometimes, particularly on Halloween, when you hear a voice from the shadows that you recognize.
I tried to convince my daughter, my 9-year-old daughter, that there was a new law that just took place, and it's called a parent tax on Halloween. And I told her that this law just was voted in by our state legislation, and I had no choice but to have a parent tax on her takes for the evening. She didn't even blink and didn't believe me from the beginning.
Yeah. Mom probably would have clued her in. Our, why do they say that this morning? Your choice. I'm going to give you a choice. Bones or boogie woogie?
I'm going to go with bones.
All right. Why are dice called bones?
I would venture to say that back in the old days, that dice were probably made out of bones. Sounded good.
Yeah. Dice are called bones because in play, they're rattled together.
Okay.
And sound like castanets. And castanets were once made of bones.
Interesting. I like my answer better.
Yeah, I kind of got the antlers. Yeah.
Well, I think they used to be made of ivory, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, tusks, antlers. I mean, it's kind of in the same neighborhood, but
probably
couldn't get them square.
Probably not.
Look, it's fixed. No, it's not. I just can't do it right.
Right. I know there's a pun there someplace.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, boy. So what's keeping you going these days?
Lots of things are going. November. Boy, I'm not even the right part of the year. November's really
busy. I won't
busy
ask you whether
the
it's
world.
The one behind us or the one in front.
But yes.
June.
Really busy in the school world because for whatever reason, November is just really popular for conferences. So we have coming up here at the end of the month is California School Boards Association Conference, and that's an opportunity for our board members to go through some training. And it's actually a very good conference and one that I think is really important, and our board does as well, because one of the things that I like to remind them is they're basically running a $40 million a year business, because that's our annual budget. So it's very important for them to have that professional development and networking with board members around the state as well.
Does staff go, or do they just get shipped out?
I go. It's myself and the board, and it is down in San Francisco this year. So we just drive down and attend the conference, and it's really, really well put on.
Either doing that out of town or whether it's in the neighborhood with the training programs, how do you determine success? Not whether or not somebody says, oh, yeah, that was really worthwhile. Yeah, fine. But if you don't implement it, got a little phrase we teach in the sales end of the building. Education without action is entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, things still have to be implemented. So how do you determine whether or not these things are viable or worthwhile when you send them off?
Well, I can tell you one of the things that's an indicator of failure is a phrase that we like to use, and that's one and done. So meaning someone comes in, gives some sort of professional development, everyone is seated there watching them, and never shall that binder come off the shelf again. That
polite as can be, and then thank you very much.
Right. And you may have some really dynamic presenters who are just fantastic entertainers, kind of like what you were just talking about. But if it doesn't get implemented inside the classroom or wherever it's intended to be implemented, it certainly is not a success.
So is that a requirement? How do you go from exposure to implementation, particularly when you're dealing with, let's say, in service training? So you've got a teacher, and I would suspect that most of the attitude, mine would be, my classroom, my rules. Okay, now here comes Fred with the latest, greatest, coolest. I go, don't think so.
Well, that's what we like to refer to as independent practitioners inside their classroom. And when the door is shut, thou shall not enter or tell us what we should be doing inside our classroom. Thankfully, that is not prevalent within our district right now. And in fact, amongst K-12 education, that is really the exception to the rule. And the reason for that is there's a set of standards that teachers are expected to teach, and there's content that they're expected to teach. It's not like at the college level where there's a tremendous amount of academic freedom and the teachers can really teach what they want to teach. There is a district set of curriculum, a district set of expectations, and then also what we call formative assessment, which is assessments throughout the year to determine how students are progressing throughout the year. And so that's what the teachers really need to look at as we're talking about that. So that ability to just go off and do their own thing really isn't there.
Is a lot of the training, Fred, that goes on, is it not the information to share, but the presentation of the information? The message, or is it the channel of the message?
Well, I'm going to kind of take that in a little bit of a different direction. And one of the things that we do in the district is we don't really subscribe much to the let's call up somebody down in San Francisco or Los Angeles and have them drive up here to Humboldt County, give a presentation, and then we'll work on trying to keep that implemented inside the classrooms. What we try to do is we have what are called instructional coaches. And our instructional coaches are teachers on special assignment. And what those folks do is become the experts in some of the things that we are taking on as strategies as a district. And then what they do is they deliver the professional development to the teachers and then take that one step further and actually go in the classrooms when the teachers are practicing and assist them with the implementation of those strategies.
Or remind them.
Well, they're not evaluative. That's what the principal does.
Okay,
yes.
Okay. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long, on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck from Eureka City Schools. For the in-service training versus kids in the classroom. Okay, the kids take tests. They're graded against each other. Hopefully it's not a curve, but that's okay. You know, however, you know, things are taken care of. You know. You have comparatives. You have history. You know. In-service training, okay, whether you have an expert on staff who's going to run around and remind everybody or teach everybody or get them all fired up or not, unless there's a standard to be measured against, is there a standard? Absolutely. Do you guys develop that as part of the preliminary prior to the in-service training so you do have something that you can reference?
Well, it really depends on the professional development. And we've really moved away from calling them in-services into professional development days because that's really what
they are. Listen, you're talking to vocational ed guy here. One thing a decade, okay?
right. And so the interesting thing about it, and I'm going to get back to your question, but the interesting thing about it for education is if you make a comparison to an athlete spends, 90, 95% of their time practicing and 5% of their time competing. In education, it's the exact opposite. And to use the analogy of teaching
in business,
in the classroom,
in life, it's the same way.
Right. Yeah. So we need to focus more on rather being out there competing all the time. We have to hone our skills as educators and learn how to better promote student learning inside the classroom. And so the most latest round of professional development days that we had this year were back on November 1st and 2nd. So many of you, when you were around on 1st and 2nd, may have seen students out walking around because they have the day after Halloween off and also the next day.
Yeah, we figure it's food poisoning from the candy with the parents putting in that candy tax.
Right, it could be. It could be, yes, yes, yes.
Couldn't get them to school.
Right, right. So anyways, we used those 2 days for the – there was some other professional development that went on, but the bulk of our staff went through this training for a program called Unified Classroom. And that Unified Classroom is a portion of our student accounting system, and it tracks how students are performing. It allows teachers to use technology for their assessments. And there's a tremendous amount of things that they can use on that. So that was one of the days. And so that's something that just becomes embedded within our system. And so teachers will need to use that all the time because they use Unified Classroom for attendance. And all.
So it's like a software program or something
exactly.
like that?
Okay. That's exactly what it is.
Versus then, mainstreaming, which is kind of what I thought when you first said it. I went, oh.
Yeah.
Another new title to appreciate.
Right. Nope. Just simply our software, our accounting program for students. The second day was spent on what's called differentiated instruction. And that's a term that's been around for a long time. And what differentiated instruction is we all know when you look out of, I mean, shoot, those of you out there that have children understand this. If you have two children, they're different kinds of learners and they're different kinds of personalities, and you have to treat those children differently because they're going to respond differently. I think of
they're different people.
Right. Yeah. I think of my son, if I get on him and kind of get a little stern in my conversation and he just kind of bows up a little bit and you know, he's great. He listens. However, my daughter, if I do that, you get the tear. And so my son doesn't give the tear, but my daughter does. And so I have to differentiate my parenting between my children. So you have to think of that in the same way in education and teaching in a classroom. You have to differentiate for those 25 or so learners that you have out there in front of you to try to do the best you can to reach as many of them as possible in their style of learning.
Customization is what I'm hearing.
You got it.
Now, it would be... It's tough for somebody who's managing 8 people, I'm thinking of a sales manager type, to have the base, you know, and everybody's got, let's say it's a mature sales staff selling,
widgets.
Mechanical pencils. I need something tangible here. Okay. So you've got the experience, you know who they are, you have time with them. And there's no start day. That's every day, right? Now you have a classroom setting. You don't know who these kids are. You might in 2 or 3 weeks, or maybe you had older brothers and sisters, or maybe you taught their parents,
right?
Depending on what's going on there. So you may have a little bit of knowledge going in, but by the time you figure out everybody, and now you've got 25 personalities, if you can't do that in sports, if you can't do that in business, is this a fool's errand trying to do it in the classroom other than just in broad strokes say, okay, here's one way to address the answer. Here's another way to find it and let the kids kind of plug in themselves.
Well, on the surface, it would certainly sound like that, but there are some very well research-based strategies on working with some of those students and differentiating that instruction for them. And so that's what the training is all about, is working with the teachers on how to implement those strategies inside their classroom. Now, it's certainly not perfect, but I will say this, that teachers who teach a small classroom, let's say you have 4 students in your classroom.
Are there any of those?
Yeah, we have a few.
We have a few.
And most of those students that are like that are there's some sort of special education program.
Okay, it's not
or
like
some
like
sort
it's
of alternative
super advanced.
Placement. Right,
okay.
Right.
Okay.
That is a completely different classroom to teach than a classroom full of 25 students.
But the teacher has been trained differently for that scenario also, though.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And so the teacher who will not be so successful is the teacher who tries to go to a group of 4 and teach them like a group of 25 or vice versa. And so that's something that we need to work on with our teachers and always improving. And we also have changing demographics in Eureka. We've all seen it. The what are called ACEs scores, adverse childhood experiences.
Define quickly.
So it's just what it says. Those are students who have had some traumatic event happen in their childhood. And if they're students who have had 2 or more really traumatic events, it really interacts with their education and their ability to be in a traditional type classroom.
KINS News and Information Times 8.
We do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, American Ag Credit, REDEC, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, and Murphy's Markets. Fred, in the last segment, you talked about, I guess, negative childhood experiences. Trying to simplify what this is, this jargon stuff. And that Humboldt County's got the highest percentage or rate of occurrence.
Right. We have the highest percentage of students who have had those adverse childhood experiences.
So what would that be? Would that be like a divorce?
A divorce can certainly be.
Or qualify?
Violence in the home, drug use in the home. There's a whole myriad of things, a death in the family, you know, of somebody who's really close to you, sibling, parent, something like that. And there's many of us as adults who can think back to our childhood and think about some of our own adverse childhood experiences.
That's what I was thinking. When you and I were, at least when I was going through, you came in a little bit later. We had life experiences.
Right.
You know, grandma or grandpa died.
Right.
The cat dies.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, not to put those on the same level, but okay. I mean, we had that, and that was part of life, and we reached out. Or we sucked it up, or we did whatever and continued on.
That's different than...
It sounds like this is a different degree or a different magnitude of impact.
Mm-hmm. So that's something that certainly is impactful on us for the rest of our life. I still remember when my grandparents died as an adult, when my mom died. I mean, those are experiences that help shape us. But maturity level that goes along with some of those. But when you start dealing with dad's beating up mom... Or mom's beating up dad. I don't know if I can have a meal on the table when I get home. Dad's going to be high tonight on heroin.
Those are different experiences.
I don't have a place to go home to because we're homeless. Those are different things that when you get to school are not the normal experiences that other children are
facing. Not normal life challenges.
Correct.
Extraordinary
Correct.
Life challenges.
Correct. For many of those students, the normal world for them is in the school. And what's interesting about that is probably the most stable environment for someone who has had some really rough experiences on the home life is when they come to school. And generally during the week, as we get to Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday in the week, their behavior starts to kind of level out because they get into that routine of the week. And some of our most challenging times with some of the students who are challenging students who have had some really bad experiences are Mondays. And right after holidays, and sometimes like leading up to Christmas, some of the students start getting a little bit squirrely because they know there's going to be 2 weeks where they're not going to have the normalcy of school. And they're not going to have the traditional Christmas where they have the Christmas tree and the family gets together. And because some of the home life in Eureka aren't that traditional home life.
Well, that's why I had written down parental involvement. I think there's a large group of us that are frustrated that the educational system has been asked to do some of these things and that the school system or educational system has accepted doing some of these things. And I don't know, is it just changing culture that is triggering this stuff, or is it the byproduct of the baby boomer, you know, it's all about me? Generation, it just seems like parenting skills are different. We had teenagers having kids 100 years ago, but the commitment to the family was different then. How do you work this thing? Or if it was Fred's world, and you could etch a sketch, and you had your pile of pixie dust, and you said, okay, this is how we're going to take care of it.
And parent tax on candy?
And parent tax on candy in Fred's world. That's there. What would you like to see change? I mean, we can't roll the clock back, but I would imagine some of the kids that had these issues is when Dad was off to World War II, since last Monday was the 100th anniversary of World War I.
My dad was killed in World War II, adverse childhood experience.
Okay, but we didn't have all of these other things being applied because Mom was there. Grandma and Grandpa were there, aunts and uncles, the neighborhood was there, church was there. There were these supports that were there that cared about the youngster and were checking in. Is that what's missing today?
So what I would say is different is the family dynamic has changed a lot. Just is your hand signaling over there? Technology has changed a lot. Our children and their use of phones and other things like that. And also another thing that has changed a lot is our services. And one of the things, if we had Fred's perfect world, we'd have less silos of services, meaning that you have Department of Health and Human Services over here, you have the school over here, you have your doctor over here, you have your dentist over here, you have, et cetera, all those different services that are out in the community, you have your city hall. We would have, for a lot of those things, a one-stop shop. So if you could...
Kind of the kid or the family out,
right,
instead of the jurisdictional...
Right.
Silo.
Right.
And they have to
run
around.
Focusing on what's best for the student and the services that are best for the student. And I'm not talking a socialist society before anybody draws to that conclusion. That's not what I'm talking about at all. I'm just talking about servicing students. And one of the things that's really incredibly frustrating is the fight over money. Who's going to get the money from the state or from the federal government?
The turf battle.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And that's where it goes to a certain extent. And you said something that was kind of an interesting buzzword for me, and that is that schools have accepted the responsibility of parenting. Well, it's not so much that we've accepted it. We have. But it's not so much that we've accepted it. It's a law. And here's what's interesting about that. We actually have to send some of our students off to these things called residential treatment centers. And so if we have a student, and this is an extreme, we've had up to 3 students out at a time, and they come to our schools, and they just can't make it in the classroom. So they go into a special education setting, and then it gets a little more severe. And so they go into, say, a therapeutic learning center, which is a little bit more isolated, and they blow out there. And then that takes them off to a residential treatment center. And what a residential treatment center is, we are sending them generally out of state. We've had some students in Texas, some students in Idaho, under 24-hour care, which are six-figure students for us that we have to pay for out of our general fund because they're unable to make it for whatever reason within the normal school atmosphere. And by law, that's us.
KINS, News and Information Times, 843. Fred's world isn't so perfect. We'll see if we can bring it back when we return.
SoCal just got a whole lot closer. No, we're not talking about some big, scary geological event. It's way cooler and with much less tectonic shifting. Starting in June, flying to L.A. will be quicker than ever with United Airlines' new nonstop flights from Humboldt County. That's right, no stops between here and there. Ascend, descend, and you're landing, like in just a couple hours. So it's kind of like L.A. is just down the road a piece. So what are you waiting for? Check it out at flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 847. We're back to Talk Chat this morning with Fred's Perfect World. All right, maybe not quite so perfect. It seems intriguing to me, Fred, that you guys in education have ended up with this responsibility, where I would have thought welfare, health and human services, child protective, state-level entities would be the ones who were shouldering the financial burden and bringing in experts or having experts available for these youngsters that need these additional levels of monitoring, of treatment, of counseling, of whatever the phrase is for them. How did it end up being an educational thing?
Really, the only place that we lose the responsibility to educate a child as if they become incarcerated into juvenile hall. And not very many students stay in the system for very long, so generally they'd be in, then out. And then if they determine that they're not mentally fit to stand trial for whatever crime it was that they committed. We just had a student here recently who went in the hall. He was a student that we had off at a residential treatment center. He did some things that were not appropriate, that were illegal. He went in the hall. They determined that he wasn't mentally fit to stand trial for what he did. And so they basically said back to the school, you're going to have to figure out what to do with him.
They turned him back out?
Right. And so that's an extreme case. Granted, an extreme case, but he was not a student that we could return. He was a middle school student.
Why does it end up back in the educational system?
Because we have compulsory education laws where we are required to provide an education for anybody that lives in our district boundaries.
Within the normal bounds of the traditional school model?
We have to – so I hate to get too technical here, but I'm going to get a little bit technical.
Go slow.
There's this thing called providing education, especially when you get into special education, that's students with disabilities, in the least restrictive environment. So the least restrictive environment would be in just a normal, everyday classroom. So if we have a student who has a disability, say, have a little problem articulating their R's, a little speech impediment, they're going to be in a normal classroom. All the way up to the extreme of a student who may have autism,
the fellow you were talking about,
or some sort of physical or mental disability or something like that. The fellow I was talking about, their least restrictive environment may be in a 24-hour care center. And so the school is responsible for that and for that education.
But why a school district and not the state education?
Well, the state would argue is that's what we provide you funding for. But where it gets difficult is students with disabilities are not fully funded. And schools, here's a great disconnect for you. We're funded somewhere around 44, 45 in the country. Our teachers are paid up there in the top half of the country. And then our living expenses are the top. So it's difficult.
Okay, back to reality. No more perfect world. I don't like that. See you next time, bud. Hey,
thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, yes. And same back to you.
See everybody tomorrow.